Welcome to Let's Talk, brought to you live by the National Indigenous Radio Service, the only opportunity offered to the broader community to be informed on the issues and current affairs from a First Nations perspective. This is Bo Spearham with Let's Talk.
Good morning and welcome to Let's Talk. Before I go on any further, I would like to acknowledge the traditional owners on this land we are broadcasting from. I also would like to pay my respects to our elders and also our elders' more recent arrival. It's great to have your company, and a big shout out to all of our mob around the continent that is taking our program via the National Indigenous Radio Service NIRS or listening via our app, which is 98.9 FM for the best country. Or if you're listening via our website, which is 98.9fm.com.au. Either platform you're listening to, it's good to have you on the program joining us this morning. I've got a special guest in the studio who's doing a bit of a national tour. I think the first time you've been in here, but I've actually had Amir on the show, I think, twice in the past, a few years ago, to have a yarn. Just about different, you know, politics and whatnot. And, yeah, so it's good to have you in the studio with us today, brother. But just before we start, tell us your name and also a bit about your background.
My name's Nazim Hussain, and my parents come from Sri Lanka. I live on Wurundjeri land in down south. And what can I tell you? Born and raised in Burwood with my mum, single mum, since we were six. Both my parents came in the 70s, mid-70s from Sri Lanka. And, actually my dad went via London, studied there, came here. Since my mum's been a single mum, she's done all the jobs from kitchen hand to leaflet delivery to just to helping people write their resumes.
Yeah.
And, so I've just sort of grown up. Two sisters, older, younger.
Cool.
I'm the only boy. I was a man of the house. Still am.
Yeah. Even though the sisters and the mum's still the boss.
Exactly. Yeah, no, they are. Yeah, tell me that I'm the man of the house. But I never
to
had
make
any.
Feel good. Yeah.
No authority.
You can hear how much of an influence your mum has on you through your comedy. You're always sort of reverting back to your mum and like the influence she had on you. But before we get to there, you've been a comedian for quite some time now. You've had shows on different channels.
In the mood for a simple country tune, with no meaningful surprise, just make three notes harmonize.
To you live by the National Indigenous Radio Service. Catch all the hard-hitting news and current affairs that focuses on all relevant First Nations issues from a First Nations standpoint. This is Bo Spearham with Let's Talk.
Good morning and welcome to Let's Talk. Before I go on any further, I would like to acknowledge the traditional owners on this land we are broadcasting from. I also would like to pay my respects to our elders and also our elders of more recent arrival. And a big shout out and a good morning to everybody around the continent that is taking our program via the National Indigenous Radio Service NIRS or tuning in via our website, which is 98.9fm.com.au, or via our app, which is 98.9fm for the best country, which you can get from most app stores. So good morning to you all. It's a pleasure to have you on the program and to be beamed into your communities, whether it's around the country or around the globe via the web. So it's a good morning to everybody. Joining me in the studio this morning, I have a special guest joining us in the studio live, but hails from Canada, but based down in San Francisco at one of the universities. Just before we start, could I get you to tell us your name and a bit about yourself, please?
Yeah, my name is Dorothy Kidd. I'm Canadian. I spent most of my life in Canada. I worked in Indigenous broadcasting in the 80s and then worked with the Inuit Broadcasting Corporation in a video documentary. And then I returned to Vancouver, where I worked in community radio for about 20 years, including supporting some of the Indigenous programming, some of the Indigenous music programs, as well as women's programs and other kinds of news programs. Then I moved to the States, and now what I do is I document how social justice movements are using communications and media in social justice campaigns.
Awesome. Cool. Well, yeah, definitely. That's the main topic to we're going to have a talk about in the program this morning. Are you Indigenous or not Indigenous?
I'm not Indigenous. I'm a white settler.
But just before we get on to having a yarn about your current work, is it sort of walking down memory lane, coming through the radio studios and
making memories from back home? Well, it's fantastic, but I don't know about what your listeners know, but most community radio stations I've been in are much more modest than this one. This one's beautiful. It's got a built-in training facility. There's kids here learning. There's another studio that's full of kids talking about whatever. There's another studio. It looks like there's places for musicians. It's lovely. When in Vancouver, we had two studios, and we could basically hear what was going on the street. And it was in a, it's in the, as we say in Canada, the poorest postage zone in the country. Pigeon Park. It's in the downtown east side, actually, where they're every February 14th there is a march for murdered and missing Indigenous women. So there's a lot of memories going on for me right now.
Good. That's good. Hopefully they're good ones as well.
Mostly positive, yeah.
That's good. That's good. And now, yeah, like you mentioned, you're based in the States now, in San Francisco, doing some work. When I was reading the papers that you sent through,
Extractivism?
Extractivism, yeah.
Okay, so extractivism is basically extraction of natural resources. And I guess the thing to say is that it's been going on since European colonialism started. That's why the Europeans came to Australia, New Zealand, and the Americas, was looking for the gold, and then the silver, and then the copper, and now the oil, and now the also the plantations of palm oil. And in Latin America, they started talking about it as extractivismo, because what they were finding was there was a scaling up of mining, and particularly Canadian mining in the 80s and the 90s. And one of the things that I recognized when I went back to Vancouver about 5 years ago and heard from people like Glenn Coulthard and Alfred Tayaki, that this word extractivism is basically about capitalist resource extraction. It's not, people extract, you know, lumber or for their livelihood, but when we talk about extraction, we're talking about huge, capital-intensive, large-scale taking out of the resources. And usually it means taking out those resources and shipping them somewhere else. It's little value added for anybody. And usually it's on Indigenous lands.
And then also with that as well comes the irreversible effects that it has to the land, has to the ecosystem, has to the local Indigenous folks as well. And, Canada's a good example of what's happening now, and I guess mainly, the tar sands at the moment, massive. What is that? What sort of mining is that?
Well, the tar sands is probably the biggest project in the world. It contributes the most to global warming of any one of these projects. So that's the first thing to say about it in terms of consequences.
And then plus it looks...
It's horrible. It's a lot of the people, and particularly Indigenous people, have got cancer as a result of it. It's destroyed the water system because... it's called tar sands because they're trying to get bitumen, which is a kind of oil that's stuck in the sand. And in order to get it out, because it's a tarry substance, they need to use incredible amount of water. So they've got the whole water system for hundreds of hectares that is devoted to trying to get this oil out of the tar sands. And then the other thing to add insult to injuries is it doesn't help anybody in Alberta where it is. It's shipped south. It doesn't even help anybody really in the States except for the big oil companies because it's shipped all the way south for export. It's, it's extracted in the south of the U.S. and then shipped out. And it's a disaster. And one of the things I'm going to talk about tonight, though, is the way I look at it is like there's all these toxic effects going on. But what's striking to me is there's also a movement that's not just protesting, but protecting. So, and especially along the line of the pipelines, there's a movement. So like you were talking about, because you were telling me earlier about your trip to Canada, there are people organizing around the pipelines from sea to sea. That's like this Canadian slogan, from sea to sea. And there are people organizing around the pipeline from British Columbia to Nova Scotia, in the Mi'kmaq territories in Nova Scotia to Elsipogtog, in New Brunswick, to Line 9 in Ontario, to the tar sands further west. People are organizing. And not only are they organizing, but it's an opportunity for them to be putting forward a different set of values. So if extractivism represents really short-term, the worst of capitalist thinking, you know, you get the resource, you exploit it, you send it out, you make lots of money. The extra activism represents a far more sustainable long-term thinking. How do we use this land for all our relations, which is how Anishinaabe people always start a conversation, all our relations. And what struck me was that this movement, which we're now calling extra activism, is actually not just reacting, but they're in fact articulating what they've been articulating for years, but they're getting some attention to it. And the way I kind of sum that up is I live in a place in the U.S., which I think most of your listeners will know, don't know much about real Indigenous people. In fact, most Americans think that Indigenous people are no longer around.
Well, we have lots of people here as well that think the exact same thing as the Aboriginal people here, sadly.
So, but what's happened since a big protest against the tar sands pipeline at Standing Rock in the Dakotas, led by the Sioux, who, if you know anything about American history, you know that the Sioux have always fought back against the American government several times. That encampment, because they set up a camp for 8 months. That encampment brought Indigenous people from all over the Americas, and then all over the world, and they brought and they came because they had also been organizing. And they not only brought Indigenous people, but they brought environmentalists who finally recognized, oh, maybe we should really pay attention to Indigenous leadership, and they brought entertainers who did music, and then the entertainers brought all sorts of other people as well.
Definitely was what was seen widely around the world and here as well, because the exact same thing, especially where I'm from down in northern New South Wales, I think there's quite a few active open, there's open pit mines, there's they're laying some pipes to do some fracking, and then other parts of the country, you know, they're doing uranium mining. And then, like you said earlier, the most of these resources, not that we want them anyways, sending them abroad as well. And no, there's no trickle, there's not really much trickle effect that comes to, you know, Aboriginal and Indigenous communities here or abroad as well, when the figures actually come out of how much they're making off, you know, these resources as well.
There is a trickle. And, you know, one of the things that we need to recognize, at least in Canada, is that a lot of it has split Indigenous communities.
Yeah, definitely here as well.
So, and one of the ways that it's split it, though, I think is really interesting, is it's making more visible the split between traditional hereditary elders and the government organized band councils.
Band councils, that's right. Yeah.
Now, I have some compassion for the band councils because I know how poor their communities are, how little money they have, and some of them have made deals with the companies because they think that will bring cash into the communities. So, in British Columbia, where I'm going to be speaking a little bit about tonight, The communities are kind of split.
Yeah.
And the band councils, many of them have supported the pipelines, but almost all the traditional elders are not. You can look at it and say, oh, this is terrible. Or you can look at it and say, well, you know what? This is making visible to everybody the whole colonial system
process,
of government.
Yeah.
And what we need to talk about is how can we, if we're going to talk about reconciliation, because in Canada there's also a state-led process of reconciliation, this process is showing all of the cracks and all of the fissures in the colonial system, which exists today, right? And has existed for 150 years in Canada. Anyways, that's some of what I'm looking at is those responses. Painful that they are also positive for the long term.
And how do Indigenous communities or activists or people, environmentalists, sort of use this data, this research to sort of protect lands and their country from, you know, multinational companies?
Well, you know, I guess this is our work as broadcasters, and then me now is documenting it. It's really complicated, but it's amazing. Mm-hmm. So for one of the things that's happening is environmentalists, as I said before, are starting to pay attention to Indigenous leadership more. So in the U.S. and also Canada, there is a call now for a Green New Deal. And it's being led by one of the new young progressive congresspeople in Washington, but it's also being echoed in Canada. And for the first time, they're trying to put forward a proposal that there be an investment not just in green jobs, but in green jobs for all of those people that are being left in the coal mines, right? So not just shut down the coal mines, but provide some kind of support. The other thing is, for the first time, they're saying we need to also reconcile with Indigenous groups. Now, the Indigenous land councils and the equivalents in North America are saying, you guys haven't gone far enough, but it's the first time I've seen an environmental document that's so comprehensive and really pays attention to Indigenous sovereignty. So that's one level. The other level that I see is that there, and this is what I'm writing about, when I first started writing about it, I thought, how do people in North America know what's going on in Latin America? I mean, I know there's not that much much attention paid, and there's not much traffic, and there's hardly any media through video. So what was happening was that people were putting video up on YouTube, and people would then download them. And then also the other thing that was happening was that people, some of the NGOs and human rights groups that were in various countries would literally bicycle them. We used to call it bicycling when you take a tape from one place to another. So one of the first successful campaigns against a Canadian mining company in Peru, in a place called Tambo Grande, a group of independent video makers made a video, and their contacts in Argentina said, can you come and visit us? They took the video before it was even finished and said, this is what your community is going to look like and face. And in Tambo Grande, they then set up a referendum, said, we're going to vote on whether we want this mine or not. They didn't have the okay from the government. They just did it. They did the same thing in Argentina. And then the thing that really impressed me was they did it in over 100 communities in Guatemala, which I think we know is probably one of the poorest communities, poorest countries in the world. This is where I first started. Like, how did they do that in Guatemala? How did that happen? And it was because they went with the video to the communities and said, this is what we've done. And the people in Guatemala said, oh, we can do that. And they did it. And so that was like 10 years ago. Now it's on YouTube or Vimeo. And that was one of the ways that Standing Rock circulated too. And one of the other things that struck me about Standing Rock too, because I learned about part of it from my students who were not necessarily very aware, not to be mean or anything, but 17, 18 year olds, they were watching music videos of Standing Rock. And so that's another way that it's communicated among the wider public. And then people like me write longer stories. I don't get half as much press as Black Eyed Peas or these guys who are making music videos. But, you know, I've got my little audience. The kids have got their audience. And it's, you know, this is what we need to look at media now. It's all decentralized in terms of who the audiences are. They have different channels of communications. And our work is trying to figure out how that's happening and how to support it.
And I guess as well with that, because on one hand, you know, it's community organizing, whether that's Indigenous, non-Indigenous, environmentalist, all that, but then they're coming up against this massive big machine in multinational companies. Whether or whether they do or don't, you know, there is involvement from politicians, whatever that involvement is. How does that sort of serve the purpose in keeping, I guess, politicians honest? All these big, massive, you know, multinational mining companies, how does that serve to them, you know, because these are the works, you know, the livelihoods of, you know, Indigenous peoples, of activists and stuff. You know, like, yeah, how does that sort of echo to the end of the whole?
Well, I think that's the timing of politics, right? And the timing of how do you divide the elite? How do you divide the dominant? Mm. So, for example, in Standing Rock, we saw that Obama, facing an election by Trump, ended up stopping the pipeline for a short period of time, and then Trump of course, reversed it.
Yeah.
But that means people, activists saw there's a crack there. We need to get the Democratic Party online. They haven't necessarily been supportive now, but this is an issue we can use if we're against Trump and they're against Trump. You know, the enemy of my enemy is my friend. Those kinds of things. In Canada, it is split 50-50.
Yeah.
Because it's a cold place, people want the energy, and also they see, as I think in Australia, that this is, you know, maybe this is going to bring in tax revenue. Maybe we're going to be able to, you know, be a profitable country if we have oil revenue. So you've got to figure out how to support the politicians providing an alternative and a horizon for the future. That's not just stopping things, but actually saying, you know, if we invest in green jobs, if we invest in more sustainable technology development, we could provide jobs here. We don't have to do it the way that they've done it in the past, which is just extracting from the earth. And that's, I guess, that's what I'm trying to say in terms of some of the actual encampments. I mean, at Unistoten, which you went to visit, they're actually modeling people going back to Indigenous people going back to the land and relearning how to hunt and trap.
Definitely, yeah, yeah,
and be ecologically sustainable. And yeah, that's small, but it can be a model for other communities to do similar things. So the larger question of what's the future is huge.
Yeah.
But I think what we can do as academics and as community radio media people is say, you know, there are alternatives out there. We need to start talking about the alternatives, not just the toxicity of the present system. We need to start talking about how we can scale up the alternatives. And that's kind of what I see my work doing, saying, oh, okay, did you know about this? These people have shut down mines all the way from Argentina to Canada, and they have stopped pipelines momentarily. But that's something that might happen more that people find out about it.
Definitely. And just on when you mentioned Unistoten, you know, in one instance, you know, they're resisting, you know, pipelines, protecting, you know, their lands. And on the other hand, they're, you know, they built, like, I think it was a 200-year-old or 300-year-old pit house that hasn't been built on their territory, you know, revisiting like traditional foods and medicines that they were planning, and everything that they were planning and building was on the GPS coordinates of the pipeline, which was even more amazing, you know.
Yeah.
Like, we went for a drive and they just showed us all this stuff and like, yeah, everything we're driving, you know, every place we went to is, you know, it's there for a purpose, you know, obviously for the traditional purpose, but then also, you know, to tell this other narrative that, you know, we exist and, you know, we're here. But and then also the start of the year, I think it was the start of the year or the end of last year, the RCMP came in and evicted some of the traditional people in Wet'suwet'en off their territory as well. And I saw Justin Trudeau got a lot of backlash when he went to some community consultation.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I was trying to explain this to another group in Sydney. Trudeau is sort of in between a rock and a hard place. He's facing an election. This is a long story because the first Trudeau was in the same situation. He's facing an election. He's lost Alberta because they're the oil-rich province. And he's got people in eastern Canada that want the oil because they're because they need it for heating. And so he's promoting the pipeline, but he's also trying to promote First Nations reconciliation. So he's, and, you know, that would be hard anyways, but he keeps putting his foot in it too. So he's actually bought one of the pipelines.
The
one that comes from the tar sands that goes in the southern part. There's three. So the one that goes in the southern part to go to Vancouver. So he's got the city of Vancouver, the city of Victoria, all kinds of, you know, academics, because it goes right by Simon Fraser University, and the province of British Columbia opposed, at least to that pipeline, even though the province of British Columbia supports another pipeline. It's very complicated politics, as we were talking about. So, you know, what I see is now it's a national issue. And does that mean it's going to get stopped right away? No. But once you put it to a national issue, you get more people talking about the future, which is what we need. We need to move the conversation to talking about the future. And you get more people learning about what the system is. Like, I think more people in Canada now know about Unist'ot'en, Indigenous communities, hereditary chiefs, that hereditary chiefs actually have a governing system that makes sense. That's the first time I've heard it talked about positively in in the public, you know, in the CBC. That another recognition that's going on is that missing and murdered women are the result of extractivism, because they call it the Highway of Tears.
Yeah, we drove on that.
That goes between the various mines and the mining communities. That's where a lot of young women were murdered. So you've got this rising consciousness now. Does that mean it's going to get resolved quickly? No.
No.
Because, you know, you live in Australia. We know that's, you know, this has happened since the beginning of the contact, right? But to me, this is a really, really fertile time. I won't say positive because I'm not a Pollyanna, but it's a fertile time.
Definitely. Two things. One, you know, like, we drove along the highway of tears, and nearly every truck stop to fill up petrol or toilet break we had, there was just posters of young people, whether mainly or young women, but there
faces
was also some young men. Yeah, like, just their posters saying missing, and it was just like, you usually stop at a clipboard and has, like, you know, community notifications. It was just full of these young people that were missing. And then, so extractivism, is that just in, like, mining industry, or is that sort of the development of, you know, the urbanization of cities? Because I know Vancouver went through some for the Winter Olympics. I know parts in South America, they're damming up, you know, indigenous lands. Does that come into the conversation as well?
Yes, because what's happening is that a lot of governments signed on to this project in the 80s. You know, some academics call it neoliberal capitalism. Well, what was established was that that the market should rule, and that corporations had the answer, and that if we basically just let corporations organize things and let the market rise, we'd be okay. And one of the things that I found from my research was that extractivism was actually part of that deal. So they said to countries like Ghana and Latin America, we'll give you loans if you open up your mines.
Yeah.
If you open up your banks to Canadian finance companies and American mining companies and Australian mining companies, we'll give you loans. The World Bank and IMF did that. And at the time, 90 countries agreed, and they reduced, if they had them, environmental legislation, labor legislation. They opened up their mines, they opened up their finance, and that's why the Latin Americans call it extractivismo, and in English it's extractivism. It's a whole system. And the other part of it is they created these huge infrastructure projects. So in Canada we have the tar sands, which is dominating the earth for hectares. In Peru, they're restructuring the hydro with hydro dams. Mm. So in, you know, in different places, there's these huge major infrastructure projects. Mm. Now they're our, you know, for most people, there are pension plans. Mm. There are, you know, they're the government financing it. Mm-hmm. There's some private money in it as well, but the government is financing a lot of the shifting of these huge projects. Mm-hmm. So is that affecting the cities as well? Yeah, mm-hmm. absolutely. Mm-hmm. You were talking about earlier about this coal mining project going forward, and it's going to affect the coast of Queensland, right? Mm-hmm. Vancouver, north of Seattle, big question for people is a coal terminal, but also the pipeline terminals as well. It's affecting the urban centers. Mm. And one of the things that I will say is that I actually think the pipelines are bringing people in the rural areas or the country, as you call it, in with the cities.
Yeah.
Because you can physically and viscerally see that pipeline. Mm-hmm. Right, and you can see the impact in the urban centers, mm. and that hasn't happened before. I mean, at least in Canada, Indigenous peoples' struggles have been pretty invisible in big urban centers, right? Like you know, unless you went out there, you didn't know about them until there was a disaster. Mm. You didn't hear about the positive stuff, but now there's these campaigns that are uniting people. Mm-hmm. Anyways, yeah.
Yeah, and definitely
not. I get too excited talking about this stuff.
No, that's all good. Makes my job easier with you just talking and talking.
Sorry about that.
No, it's all good. It makes, like I said, makes my job easier, and that I have to ask less questions. But no, big thanks for joining us. I know you have to head off. You got some things to do. Is there anything that you'd sort of like to leave our listeners with to sort of think of or think? And to maybe, you know, eventually act on, you know, in terms of our discussion this morning.
Well, you know, I think that I'm sure you talk about this in your show. I think it's because of the international or transnational Indigenous network that's been built for the last 50 years that you know about this, that people here can connect with, that it's made it possible for this to become an international issue. I think people listening to this could go to Google and put in Unistoten, and Google, you know, change the spelling, so I'm not going to spell it out. You can find it, and you can go to their page and you can see their videos and you can learn about it. You can also go to the Indigenous Environmental Network and find out what's going on.
Definitely.
And then, you know, as we all say, politics is both local and international. Mm-hmm. We don't all say that, but I do. So do something here around the coal mines.
Definitely. A good place to start would be SEED, which is a young First Nations climate justice organization. They have groups, chapters all over the country. And I know they'd be definitely, you know, on board to supporting traditional owners up there in northern Queensland with, you know, they have been with this, you know, battle against Adani. But a big thanks for joining us on the program. If you're ever back in Australia and in Brisbane, please come back in so we can continue our yarns.
Thanks very much.
And if you've joined the program this morning, you can catch the repeat 7 p.m. tonight now on 98.9 FM, or you could go to our website at 98.9fm.com.au and follow the links to the podcast.
7th of April is World Health Day. In commemoration of World Health Day, it's set a reminder to visit your local AMS and have your 715 health check done and check up on your physical and mental health. Plus, you can receive a new Deadly Choices shirt to style up in as well. Some tips for good health include:
try to do something you enjoy every day. That might mean dancing, gardening, going for a walk, or yarning with friends. Find ways to relax, like meditation, reading a book, or getting a massage. Live healthier. Eat healthy foods, get enough sleep, be active regularly, limit alcohol intake, and go for regular medical checkups.
To find your nearest clinic, visit www.iuih.org.au/clinics.
A message from the Institute for Urban Indigenous Health.
In the mood. simple country tune. With no meaningful surprise, just make three notes harmonize. It's all the same, this worn-out game. Gonna hop off the cliché train. Ain't nothing wrong in a simple song. No need to brood when there's nothing left to lose. Today will slip before your eyes. It's just a complicated lie. This worn out game of dropping names. Gonna run out of people to blame. Ain't nothing wrong in a simple song. Blues. Some a lot worse off than you. Just sting out of the rain. Should stop you going insane. It's all the same, this worn out game. No one really to blame. Just sing along to a simple song. Ain't nothing wrong in a simple song. Just sing along to a simple song.
When the river was free, when it moved with the season, and needed no reason to be. Before it was dammed, and changed forever it seems. Did you drink of its sweetness? Did you feel the spirit within? There's a wild dog calling across the plain. An eagle soaring high in the sky surveys this land. The life they knew will never be the same. Off in the distance, hither, onward march of man. Yeah, change is coming with the mindless march of man. Then what will we do when the fish are gone, when pure clean water becomes a dream? Then what will we tell our generations to come that we traded their future for one of our greedy schemes? Nightbird calling across the plain, with only the moon to listen or hear his pain. And it seems the stars are the only things that we can't change, as they bear witness to the onward march of man. They bear silent witness to the mindless march of man. They'll call it progress when they farm your sacred lands and turn your dream into one great big environmental sham. They'll use their sprays and modern farming techniques to poison the water and everything else we eat. There's a warm wind blowing across the plain, and it carries a smell of poison and a scent of greedy men. This land we knew forever will be changed. It's getting closer with the onward march of men. Yeah, trouble's coming with the mindless march of men. They say the meek will inherit this world, but what good is that if it's been turned into a living hell? Wake up and realize time is running short, and soon we'll have nothing left worth. Across the plain, and it carries a warning of devastating change. And if we don't listen, we're surely gonna pay. The roar of progress marks the onward march of man. It's a curse, this mindless march of man. Yeah, change is coming with the mindless march of man. Yeah, trouble comes with the mindless march of man. Mindless man. March of
man. This land is mine, all the way to the old fence line. Every break of day I'm working hard just to make it pay. This land is mine. Yeah, I signed on the dotted line. Campfires on the creek bed, bank breathing down my neck. They won't take it away. They won't take it away. They won't take it away from me.
This land is me. Rock, water, animal, dream. They are my song, my beings here, where I belong. This land owns me, from generations past to infinity. We're all but woman and man. You only fear what you don't understand. They won't take it away. They won't take it away. They won't take it away from me.
This land is mine.
This land is me.
This land is mine.
This land owns me.
This land is mine.
This land is me.
They won't take it away.
They won't take it away. They won't take it away from me.
day. From half a mile outside the town on foot he made his way. Well, once a week he had this job at the sale yard drafting stock. Half the price of the standard wage and a feed was what he got. Jack dealing, how we gonna win? When we're guilty of their darkest crime of being zipped up in black skin. We're living on the fringes, far below the standard line. Our heritage, they try to take it back and bury it back in time. We're exiled in the very land of our ancestors and gods. Pushed back across our hunting grounds and shot down like a dog. Jack dealing, how are we gonna win, boy? When we're guilty of their darkest crime of being zipped up in black skin. Genocide upon our child, our women were raped and beat. Well, the Lord just slammed me in a cell being on the street. We're living in the riverbeds and in the urban slums. They give us that tag of lazy cats that won't get off their bum. Jack dealing, how are we gonna win, boy? When we're guilty of their darkest crime of being zipped up in black skin. Well, they'd call us jet black or hybrid. Well, it matters nothing much. We're black, that we're third rate. And they're treating us as such. They mail us welfare handouts and they fed us on sheep guts. They satisfied their conscience. We won't bite the breast we suck. Jack dealing, how are we gonna win, boy? When we're guilty of their darkest crime of being zipped up in black skin.
I was born in the bush near old Alice Springs, as far as you get from the sea. My mother was a fighter, my daddy was too. He never knew a bastard like me. My brothers and my sisters are scattered like the wind, from the desert and the hills to the sea. Much too young, many died, but I have survived, so lucky a bastard like me. So lucky, a bastard like me. I have survived a hell of a ride. Nobody knows a bastard like me. I call me a stray, a dog every day. Call me a mongrel half breed. Now mongrels are strong, so if you take me on, watch out for a bastard like me. Better watch out for a bastard like me. I fought all the way, I fight every day. You can't stop a bastard like me. I've taken my licks, I've taken my kicks, I am a man of degree. I wear the scars, I earn them so hard, every day in a lucky country. Try and stop a bastard like me.
As I sit outside in the darkness and look above me at the stars that twinkle brightly in the sky, when a streak of light fell from the heaven, just like a teardrop falling from my mother's eye. Yes, I know how much we'd all like to help her. She's struggling very hard to stay alive. So let's all unite and put her back together, so our children and their children can survive.